Good morning. I call the State Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order on this March 27th, 2025. There is a quorum present. Konash Chair, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
I would move approval of minutes from March 25th, 2025.
Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. I will ask that Vice Chair Bonner come to the chair table and I will go to present House File 2783.
All right. Good morning, Chair Clevorn. And it looks like first up today we have House File 2783 for consideration. Chair Clevorn, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you very much, Chair Bonner. I have an A1 amendment that I would like to adopt to put the bill in the order I would like. If I can explain the A1, please.
Chair Clevorn moves that we bring the A1 or move the A1 amendment. If you want to go ahead and discuss the A1 and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you. And I just want to be clear to the committee that my intent today is to have House File 2783 laid over as the vehicle bill for our budget this year. So House File 2783 now being before us, I'd like to move the A1. Moving the A1, I would like the committee to know that on lines 1.2 and 1.3, this has to do with a correction to the LCC budget recommendation. The next section, section 3, has to do with the State Board of Investment. These are technical corrections that they ask for in their bill. And then if you go to section 16 on line 7.6, you will see an amendment that allows the Racing Commission to go from the regulatory fee imposed from 1% to 2% on advanced deposit wagering. This is to offset the regulatory cost that the commission must pay in order to do the work that they do. So that's what the amendment does. And if anyone has any questions, we're happy to answer those. There are members of the State Board of Investment here. There is a letter in your packet from the Racing Commission that explains more fully the 1% increase. And we will answer any questions you might have about the A1, but I would move adoption, please.
All right. Any discussion to the A1? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Clevorn, I didn't follow where you were talking about the Race Commission on your amendment. Mm-hmm. What line was that?
So there is a letter in the Racing Commission is on line 7.6 of the amendment.
I'm not sure that we have a letter in our packet, Madam Chair.
There was a letter posted in the packet from the Racing Commission dated March 24th, 2025.
Do we have a letter?
Thank you.
We have awesome pages in this committee. So.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, if you could just restate, there's a rate increase and then a tax increase,
Madam Chair.
If I heard you right.
Madam Chair. Sorry. So in the March 24th, 2025 letter addressed to the State Government Finance and Policy Committee members, it says that Minnesota has a strong horse racing industry for over four decades. In the second paragraph, it says, the racing industry is now facing significant financial pressures, including costs associated with the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, called HISA. In the last sentence of the second paragraph, it says, in 2025, Minnesota's assessment from HISA is nearly $700,000. In the third paragraph, it states the commission is seeking to increase the fee paid for online wagering platforms to host betting horse races, known as the advanced deposit wagering, from 1% to 2%. Further in that third paragraph, it says this is to offset some of the commission's regulatory costs. The last sentence in that third paragraph says this proposal has no general fund impact. That is the reason for the amendment to allow them to go from 1% to 2%.
Representative Koznick.
Madam Chair, Chair Cleburne, I appreciate the very thorough, since it was just put into me, so that I appreciate that very much. Like some time to observe it, but generally doubling the rate of tax and in the last paragraph that it only impacts Canterbury Park causes me some concern, but we will proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Is there any other discussion to the A1? Seeing none, we'll go to the vote to get this bill in the shape that the author would like it. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the ayes have it. The A1 is adopted. Chair Cleburne, to your bill.
Thank you. And members, as you know, every year the governor puts forward a recommendation for the state budget that the governor believes is appropriate for our state. This bill, House File 2783, is that recommendation, and it will be the vehicle that we use for this committee to do the state government budget. There will be a delete all to this budget, but I want to make sure that everyone understands that's how it works, since we have several new members on the committee. And with that, I will just walk through very quickly what is in the bill, and then we're happy to answer any questions. With me today, I have Tamar Grunfeld, who is the Commissioner of Administration, and I have Deputy Commissioner Britta Ritan from MMB, who can answer very technical questions about the bill. So in the beginning, in Article 1, you will see the various state government appropriations. You will see that there are 38 lines in the appropriation, or 38 sections in the appropriation. The state government committee is responsible for numerous entities within state government, and that lays out their appropriations. Article 2 is the state government policy. In Section 1, you will see a code of ethics for the legislative branch. That's in Article 2. In Article 3, there is only Article 1 and Article 2. In Article 2, the first section deals with the code of ethics for the legislature. Section 2 deals with percentages to pension plan. Well, it's actually Section 2 through, that deals with percentages for pension plans. Government 3 allows changes to the Government Data Practices Act. Section 4 applies to the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act to the legislature as well. Section 5 deals with data sharing. Section 6 deals with the legislative and budget proposal data. Section 7 is program payments related to fraud. That allows data sharing as well. Section 8 is carry forward. The governor is asking for agencies to be allowed carry forward. Section 7 is a state building renewable energy storage vehicle account. This is merely an account. It doesn't fund in the account. This was in the state government bill of 2024 as well. Section 10 is the insulin repayment account, and it's an annual transfer from the health access account. Section 11 deals with employee contributions. Well, sections 11 through 19 deal with employee contributions to different retirement systems. Section 20 is Minnesota management and budget, and it decreases an appropriation for data collection standards. Section 21 is the Commissioner of Management and Budget, and it modifies the law transferring money from the healthcare access account for the insulin safety net program. And Section 20 is a repealer that repeals an annual transfer of $450,000 from the general fund to housing support account for the housing support of Minnesota as provided in law. And that is very high level of what the bill does, and we will stand for questions.
Thank you, Chair Clevor, for that run through. And I believe we have Commissioner Granville with you today. If you would like to go ahead and state your name, affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Vice Chair Bonner and Chair Nash and committee members. My name is Tamara Granville. I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Administration, and good to see many of you again. Admin's primary role is to help government best serve Minnesotans. We are a central service agency with a wide-ranging set of responsibilities that ultimately touches every part of state government and provides services in every single one of our Minnesota communities. Admin previously presented the governor's budget recommendations for our agency, so I'll briefly summarize the appropriations and policies contained in House File 2783. First, the governor recommends an increase in admin's operating budget. This appropriation covers growing expenses for health care, compensation, utilities, and IT. Second, the bill also funds an increase in lieu of rent. This appropriation funds the known costs of operations around the Capitol area for entities that do not pay rent in their leased spaces. Third, it also is also included in the bill is the elimination of unassigned fiscal agent funding of $500,000 per year. Finally, the bill on the budget side provides flexibility to transfer dollars between accounts within the agency if needed with legislative notification. The policy portion of the bill establishes three things. First, the state's building renewable energy storage and electric vehicle account. As Chair Clevorn noted, this would enable admin to leverage federal funds for renewable energy and or energy storage upgrades at state-owned facilities. This is particularly important for facilities that run 24/7. The bill also strengthens the authority for state agencies to share data with one another related to suspected or confirmed fraud in public programs. The data could be shared if the access promotes the protection of public resources or the integrity of the public programs, or if it aids in the law enforcement process. Finally, the bill makes a budget-neutral technical correction. This change properly identifies the account into which transfers from the Healthcare Access Fund should be made for the insulin repayment program. That completes my summary of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Then we will move. I think we have Britta, the Deputy Commissioner here. Deputy Commissioner Raytan, did you have testimony, or were you just here for questions?
Madam Chair, I have testimony.
Perfect. All right. Then if you want to go ahead and state your name, affiliation, and please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Britta Raytan, Deputy Commissioner at MMB, and I just will quickly review the Governor's 2025 budget recommendations for MMB. We did present this information in greater detail in front of this committee on March 4th, so I will just cover these recommendations very quickly. The first recommendation for MMB is an operating adjustment to help cover growing costs related to maintaining our operations, such as compensation, healthcare contributions, FICA, Medicare, utilities, IT services, et cetera. The next recommendation focuses on enhanced oversight capacity at MMB. So that recommendation includes three additional FTEs in our internal control and accountability unit, four additional FTE in our statewide payroll services, and this would be to provide additional oversight, training, compliance-related work with payroll staff across state government, two FTE for enterprise labor relations, and two FTE in our accounting services division to continue to upgrade our policies and procedures and work with our agency partners to make sure compliance is clear and more understandable to folks across state government. Now shifting to proposed savings within the governor's recommendations, the governor's budget also recommends an adjustment to an appropriation from the 24-25 biennium related to the DCYF implementation office. So this implementation office is housed at MMB, and the proposal would cancel $8.5 million from the DCYF transition account that is currently held by MMB and reappropriate $6 million of that cancellation directly to DCYF. The benefit of reappropriating the funds directly to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families is that then they will be able to draw down federal reimbursement on those dollars. And that federal reimbursement is estimated to be $1.92 million in federal funds. So incorporating both the federal reimbursement and the net reduction to the appropriation, this would save $4.42 million to the general fund. Another item in the governor's recommendation to produce savings is a one-time reduction of $1.7 million from an MMB project related to identifying minimum standards for state agencies when collecting demographic data. The remaining resources from the original appropriation will still be used to move this project forward, and it will still allow us to work towards effective alignment of data across the state enterprise. The final recommendation related to budget savings is a proposal to repeal a transfer from the general fund to a housing support account in the special revenue fund that was established in 2024. The funding has not been programmed or appropriated for a specific purpose at this point in time. So when this transfer was set up, I think the assumption was that the programming of those dollars would be determined later. So this would result in a $450,000 annual savings to the general fund by eliminating that transfer. And then the final item I will touch on is a recommendation across agency operating funds to allow agencies to uniformly carry forward unexpended, non-grant operating appropriations for the second year of a biennium into the next biennium. The budget impact of this change would reduce forecast general fund cancellations. So this comes as a cost relative to the overall budget. And the estimated cost is $15 million. But this would provide agencies with an additional tool to help manage cost pressures from one year to the next and would align the carry-forward authority in the executive branch with the existing carry-forward authority in the legislative branch. And with that, I'm glad to stand for questions if you have them.
All right. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Do we have discussion? Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank Chair Cleburne. Mm-hmm. And for you, Commissioner, one of the questions I have, how much total FTEs does this add with the governor's budget?
Deputy Commissioner, excuse me.
I can answer for MMB. There may be others in the room that can provide an answer for the entirety of the governor's budget. I don't have that information with me, Representative Joy, but we could get that for you. But in terms of for MMB, it's 11 additional FTE.
Representative Joy.
Okay. excuse me, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things I look at is as we're going into a $6 billion looming deficit caused here and we're increasing full-time staff and we hear schools are starting to cut staff because they don't have enough money from what's coming down from the mandates of this administration. I think it's important for us to be looking at this when we're growing government on the state level, but our kids, the vulnerables that we're trying to teach and get through things, are losing teachers and losing mentors. I think it's something for us because what's going to happen is the counties and the cities are going to be put, this is going to be falling on the schools, counties and cities are going to be putting more taxes on to our residents. I think we have to really look into that as we're growing this. We need to look seriously at what's happening here. Spending the $18.5 billion surplus, raising $10 billion in taxes, and going into a $6 billion deficit, and we're growing government. And this isn't even talking about paid family leave that's coming on the pipeline of 400 new employees. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Do we have any other members with questions or comments? All right. Seeing none, then we will, is there any other, we'll go ahead and go to a vote, or would you like to close, Chair Cleburne?
Yes, thank you, and I'll renew my motion that House File 2783 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion as our vehicle bill. And members, I'm happy to hear any of your questions, concerns, Co-Chair Nash and I will be working very closely to make sure that the bill reflects the will and desire of the committee. So we will make sure that we listen to all of your concerns carefully. And with that, I move that it be laid over.
All right. Thank you to our testifiers. And with that, we will lay over House File 2783 as amended for possible inclusion. All right. We'll move on to the next.
Oh, you took my phone. Good morning, Representative Pinto. It's good to have you with us. We have before us now House File 2603. I will move the House File 2603 be moved to Ways and Means. And with that, your bill is before us. Would you like to introduce the bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and all, good to see you again. I think it was just last week, that we were together. I think that was on Thursday. And so there was a full presentation of this bill, including quite a large number of commissioners. Madam Chair, one thing that we should probably do is there was an article in the bill that had been just inadvertently left off of that, and it's in the A1. It's Article 7 relating to state government, which is so particularly appropriate. And so I'd ask Madam Chair if a motion could be made to get that added to the bill.
Thank you very much. And as we have discussed before, the A1 is the provisions that apply specifically to this committee. And we discussed these provisions before, but they were not engrossed in the bill itself at that time. So I would ask for adoption of the A1. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption of the A1, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the A1 is adopted. Next, to your bill as amended. Do you want to discuss it at all, or should we just?
I'll just, Madam Chair, remind members that there's quite a few provisions in here. Again, a lengthy presentation, and really falls into those three buckets that we discussed before: better detection and oversight, stronger investigative and enforcement authority, and increased criminal penalties. The individual provisions within 2603 are moving in other bills. This is simply a compilation of them to have them presented to you all as the folks who are overseeing all of government. So I think that's all, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And is it your understanding, Chair Pinto, that the other divisions, if they choose to adopt those provisions, those costs would be carried in their budgets?
Indeed, Madam Chair, that is my understanding.
So in this committee, is it your understanding that there is no cost to the state government budget?
That is my understanding, Madam Chair. Obviously, defer to you and to staff, but that's my understanding.
All right. Thank you very much. That is my understanding as well. Seeing no further questions to the bill as amended, I would ask for a vote to re-refer. Oh, I'm sorry. Co-Chair Nash, I am so sorry.
Old habits.
Please, go right ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Pinto, how many other committees has this officially been heard in this iteration of the bill?
Chair Pinto.
And Madam Chair, so this is the bill was presented in this committee, as you're aware, and then was also presented in the Fraud Prevention and State Agency Oversight Committee. That was informationally. That committee has not heard bills formally at this point in session. But that's it for this version of the bill, which kind of makes sense because the individual pieces are then being heard in the committees to which they pertain.
And Madam Chair.
Co-Chair Nash.
Thank you, ma'am. And I believe that it was heard informationally here as well. So it was never actually before us. I think it was last week it was presented to us, but it was in an informational manner, and I don't think it had a House file assigned to it at the time. I think that processed later in the day after the paper push, if I'm correct. I understand that this is moving in different places in different directions, but I think at the moment, after consulting with our team, that we are not comfortable with moving this to Ways and Means, that we would prefer it be laid over.
Thank you, Co-Chair Nash. You know, I forgot to ask if there was any member of the public who wished to testify. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify or have questions about this bill? Okay, seeing none, apologies, Chair Pinto, for going out of order. Would you like to respond to Co-Nash?
Well, I guess I'll, Chair. I will, thank you. I'll defer to Chair Nash and to you, Madam Chair, regarding what you want to do regarding your committee. I guess I'll note that, so the bill is now having a formal hearing, right? But there was quite a lengthy discussion and presentation last week. It's just that the way that things worked is that those individual pieces have been moving through other committees. It took the reviser quite some time to gather those individual pieces into this particular bill, and I think it arrived at sort of that 5:01 on that Friday, and so wasn't able to be introduced in time to be heard formally last Thursday. Instead, it's being heard formally now. But as far as whether there's support on this committee to advance the bill, I do think it's a very worthy bill to advance, but I'll certainly defer to the chairs as to what they want to do.
Co-Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, purely from a process perspective, having not had the opportunity to have it come before us officially, my side of the aisle was not offered the opportunity also to offer amendments. Your amendment for the state government piece is an amendment, and as you know, as a chair, we don't offer amendments to amendments in committee, so to have it come from a formal perspective, it has not. So once again, we would move that it would be speed laid over.
Madam Chair,
please, Chair Pinto.
So I guess I'm a little bit confused by that, Chair Nash. I'll wait for a second. I'm a little bit confused because the bill received a significant presentation. There was quite a lengthy discussion. There were five members on your side who asked questions and made comments. That was last Thursday. So that was a week ago. The bill, I think, has been posted for a number of days. So if you wanted to offer amendments, there's certainly the chance, was the chance to do so. So I guess I don't, and again, whether there's support or not, that's up to you. But I guess regarding the process, there's been plenty of opportunity to offer amendments. There's certainly been no barrier to that at all. The bill is before you. If you think a change should be made to the bill, there was plenty of chance to say we think this change should be made, offer the amendment to do so. In my view, and I think I would hope in the view of a number of committee members, this is something that is ready to be moved on. But again, would defer to you and to Chair Cleburne.
Co-Chair Nash, did you have a follow-up?
Nothing further.
Yeah, I thought, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Co-Chair Nash, I thought the minutes are the rules for this committee that you submitted, which are still, we haven't amended, allowed for amendments to amendments. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, if memory serves me, it is for the DE, not for a bill. So,
I don't think it says that.
Nonetheless, we're advocating for it to be laid over.
All right. And as I stated when this bill was brought before us in an informational session, previously, this exact language is in other bills, including my own, which would be the state government bill, which we haven't heard because you were presenting it this way. The amendment that is being adopted today was also presented at the same time as the informational hearing. An opportunity was given at that time to ask questions. Is that correct, Chair Pinto?
It certainly is, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to ask for a roll call. And I'm going to renew the motion that House File 2603, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. And with that, I will ask the committee legislative assistant to take the roll.
Co-Chair Cleburne.
Aye.
Co-Chair Cleburne, aye. Co-Chair Nash.
No.
Co-Chair Nash, nay. Vice Co-Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Vice Co-Chair Bonner, aye. Vice Co-Chair Davis.
No.
Vice Co-Chair Davis, nay. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Clardy.
Aye.
Representative Clardy, aye. Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Jones, aye. Representative Joy.
No.
Representative Joy, nay. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Representative Howard, aye. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick, nay. Representative Kraft.
Aye.
Representative Kraft, aye. Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Quam? No. Representative Sexton?
No.
Representative Sexton? No. Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, the ayes are 7, the nays are 7.
With the vote of 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail. I'll tap that gavel. And then the next, I will move that House File 2603 as amended be laid over. And with that, the bill is laid over. Thank you, Chair Pinto. I appreciate your being with us this morning and for presenting this great fraud package, anti-fraud package. Thank you.
Thank you, chairs and members.
Right. And next, I will move to the testifiers table for House File 2846.
Welcome back, Chair Cleavorn. All right, we have before us House File 2846 for consideration. Chair Cleavorn, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Bonner. I appreciate that. House File 2846 is the Attorney General's bill appropriates the Attorney General's funding for fiscal years 26 and 27. It establishes the Consumer Protection Restitution Account and provides money recovered by the state in litigation or legal settlement would replenish the Consumer Protection Restitution Account until the balance would reach $2 million, with any remainder transferred to the general fund. It's important to note that under current law, all of these proceeds would go to the general fund. The Attorney General's office would also award money in the Consumer Protection Restitution Account to consumers who were harmed by unlawful acts or practice that was the subject to the Attorney General's consumer enforcement action when a consumer has not previously received compensation required by a judgment, consent order, settlement, or other final court order. And with me today, I have John Keller. Is that correct? And Mr. Keller is the Deputy Chief Counsel at the Attorney General's Office to provide testimony.
All right. Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Chief Deputy Attorney General Keller, if you would like to go ahead and state your name, affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam. Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Keller. I'm the Chief Deputy Attorney General, and with me today is Laura Sales of our Government Affairs. Thank you all for inviting us to be here today. We're always proud to testify in front of this committee and to share about the important work of the Attorney General's office, what we're doing to help Minnesotans. We'll be doing an overview of the key work of the office next week, and we've only got limited time today for this presentation, so I'll skip through our usual introductory remarks and get right to our budget request. Attorney General Ellison is the state of Minnesota's chief legal officer. The mission of our office is to help Minnesotans afford their lives and live with safety, dignity, and respect. We want to thank the legislature for its investment in our office over the last 6 years. Our ability to strengthen our team has helped us deliver results for the people of Minnesota. In the 20 years before the AG was sworn in 2019, the office saw a reduction in budget, even as our state's population increased, society became more complex, and litigation challenged more and more consumers. The funding we received in 2023 helped us hire critical new staff who've made a significant contribution across our office and across the state. It's worth noting, however, that even with the legislature's significant investments in the office, our 24-25 base funding is still only 65% of what it was 30 years ago, adjusted for inflation. For the 26-27 budget cycle, we have a set of requests that will help this office continue to do its important work. And because of our limited time, I'll only give the highlights. You should also have a one-page document that's been circulated with more detailed information. Our budget request is split into one-time requests for fiscal year 26 and an ongoing increase to our operating budget. Excuse me. Our one-time request for 26 is $940,000. as an important part of attracting and retaining top talent to serve the public, we need professional, functional, and a secure work environment. Our office seeks one-time funding of $500,000 to complete the renovation of our Town Square Tower office and to improve the physical security of that building. Additionally, the office is requesting $250,000 to upgrade our primary server room in the same building. After a thorough evaluation of the server room, which houses our critical IT infrastructure, we've identified outdated equipment and other deficiencies that need to be addressed. Additionally, we're requesting $40,000 for dedicated performance evaluation systems to enhance the office's protection of secure data. And lastly, in the one-time request, we're seeking $150,000 to modernize our website, where important information about things such as scams, tenants' rights, charities, and how to file complaints with our office are accessed. In regards to our ongoing budget, we respectfully request an increase to our general fund budget of $7.9 million per year, and this includes a general operating budget increase, resources for salary parity, and funding for 26 additional FTEs. The new attorneys and legal assistants that have come on board since the end of the 2023 session have led to a need for an increase to the general operating budget to fund things such as an increase in our IT section budget, parking, funds for deferred compensation, and vacation payouts. The AGO's request is for ongoing increase to its operating budget of $1.5 million per year. Next, when our salaries are competitive, we're able to hire, retain, and promote the best talent to protect the interests of the state of Minnesota and Minnesota consumers. We request $2.7 million per fiscal year to bring parity to the legal assistant portion of our staff and to continue to close the salary gap between our staff at the AGO and the salaries of other public law offices. I won't spend time on the Medicaid fraud portion of our request, as we'll cover that later today, I believe. Mm-hmm. The need for our post-conviction review and the large number of requests for expungement is greater than what we're able to do with existing staff, and we request four additional FTEs to meet that demand. Next, our office enforces both state and federal antitrust laws, which protect the marketplace and benefit consumers and businesses by maintaining competition. To continue to do that work and to meet the growing demand, we request one additional FTE. Next, our e-discovery and litigation support team manages terabytes of litigation data and tens of millions of documents each year. Again, to continue to meet the increased demand of our IT and e-discovery, we request three additional staff. On the non-legal side of our office, to meet the complexity of enforcing the law, we need to rebuild additional employees in the following areas: in HR, in our support staff, in security, a law clerk, an intern, coordinator, our digital communications, and IT. In 2023, as mentioned, the legislature established and appropriated $1 million for the initial one-time funding of our litigation fund. The $1 million from that initial setup of this fund will soon be spent, and we're proposing legislation to turn this into a revolving fund using the recoveries from consumer protection cases, where a small percentage of those recoveries will be used to fund ongoing litigation. The request to set up a consumer protection restitution fund, as mentioned, is also traveling as a separate bill, HF 1392. And lastly, the Health and Teacher Licensing Division seeks an increased transfer from the 1201 fund. This division represents multiple boards in actions related to licensure and regulatory oversight of healthcare providers and educators. To meet the increased demand for the work of this division, the transfer of funds from the 1201 needs to be increased by $500,000. These one-time and ongoing strategic investments will help the AGO continue to rebuild into a top-functioning 21st century public law office. Madam Chair, and members, thank you again for the opportunity to present, and we're happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Deputy AG. I appreciate that. And next we have Director Sales. If you want to go ahead and state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Laura Sales, and I'm the Director of Government Relations. I'm just here for technical questions.
All right. Thank you for that. Then we will move to member questions. I do have Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you guys for this presentation today. Thank you. And my question is, so since 2019, looks like we've added about 70 new full-time employees, 69.2. And the question is we've seen a lot of press lately, and a lot of times when we try to invest and get more efficient in Minnesota and see how we can do better and make things better, you know, you kind of look for an ROI, return on investment, when you invest so much money into an office and see how they're being more efficient. Has there been a time, I guess, in the last 5 years, 6 years, where we've seen some return investment more efficient when we've invested this money?
Deputy Chair Cleavorn or Deputy AG?
Thank you, Chair. This is really an important question, and I'm really glad that you brought it forward, and I would ask that the Deputy please answer the question.
Deputy AG.
Sure, Madam Chair, members. In terms of the increase in capacity in our office and the past investment, as we mentioned, we're extremely grateful for the support. In the opening remarks, we talked about the disinvestment in the office for the previous 20 years and where we really started from. What we have been able to do in terms of building the staff and building on the return, I'll point to one of the early bills that traveled throughout 2023 was around rebuilding our criminal division, which had been reduced when we started to one full-time prosecutor. With the support of the office, that increased to 9. It allowed us to dramatically increase the support that we can provide to county attorneys across the state. As we've testified in the past, our ability in the AG's office to prosecute crimes is at the invitation of county attorneys. And in many of your districts, when there is a horrific crime, a murder, or even two crimes that happen in short succession, the capacity of some of the smaller county attorneys' offices are either surpassed or impossible to meet that. So we've been able to do that, and I think we'd get positive support from the County Attorneys Association about that example of return on investment. Another area I would point to, a significant investment was provided to the office in consumer protection. We've increased our charities division dramatically, which has also allowed us to take on additional investigations and respond to inquiries about charities quicker, as well as additional consumer protection in areas of antitrust and wage theft. So those are some of the examples, Representative, that I can talk to you off the top of my head.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Deputy, for that information. You know, and that's one of the things, you know, those are prime examples in Minnesota we got to be focusing on. You know, and we're going to have a litigation coming with the 2040 energy bill because we know North Dakota is going to come after us with the interstate commerce. So we have to lawyer up for that. We also see a lot of publicity right now of lawyering up to go after the Trump administration. And that's, I think we got to bring back our stuff and focus on Minnesota. We are going to have some issues, however we want to look at it, either way. But I think we got to focus on Minnesota. So I hope we just, when we invest new things, we're taking it and using it here and trying to be efficient. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you. And I think Representative Joy brings a really important piece to mind, right? What does the Office of the Attorney General do for Minnesotans? And I would like, for many people, they don't know. They just know we have an Attorney General, but they don't know what the Attorney General's office is. It is the chief public law firm for the state of Minnesota to protect Minnesotans. So when we look at the policies that are coming down from the Trump administration, as you mentioned, we need to make sure that Minnesotans' rights to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security are protected. And it is our AGs all across the nation that are making sure that they're standing up for the rights of Minnesotans, whether it's fraud, whether it's these federal budget cuts, We send a lot of money to Washington, D.C. as the state of Minnesota, and it's the AG that stands to protect Minnesotans. Thank you.
Yes. I think I'll also remind us that we might not want to impugn any motives of offices. We do want to make sure that we convey that the AG's office is the people's lawyer, and it is their responsibility and their duty to protect the people of Minnesota, including in litigation. And with that, we will move on to Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, why is the Attorney General not here this morning, Mr. Keller?
A Deputy AG.
Representative Davis and Madam Chair, unfortunately, the Attorney General had a scheduling conflict, but is committed to attending in the future.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Attorney General has a conflict going on. I just want to make sure I understand when we're here in state government discussing his budget. That's very interesting. And I haven't seen, I'll just make note, I haven't seen the Attorney General come meet with any of us this year at all. In fact, I haven't seen it in the last 3 years. Now, maybe he has with someone not on this committee, on this side of the aisle, but I think his absence says a lot. So this bill is appropriating $105 million to the Attorney General over the next 2 years, correct? Mr. Kelly?
Madam Chair.
Okay. Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you. I would ask for you to please look at line 1.24 of the bill for the total appropriation.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. And so that's a significant increase, and I would just like to note for the record, for such a significant increase, I would think that the Attorney General would reach out to our side of the aisle for support of the ask for the increases. I just want that noted for the record. And I'll also just point out, since 2019, we've seen an extreme increase in crime, the level of crime, if you compare 2019 to today in 2025. It is a huge jump in crime, especially when it comes to violent crimes across the state of Minnesota. And so I'll just also note that I'm really hopeful that with this increase in funding that the Attorney General is asking for, that we can see that number drop significantly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, I believe that.
Thank you. Chair Cleavorn.
I believe that the Chief Deputy would like to respond.
Chief Deputy AG Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Davis. Every year the AG does offer to meet with both Democrats and Republicans on all issues we're bringing forward. I think in January he met with Representative Niska and certainly renews that offer and would make himself available to meet with anyone on this committee or otherwise.
Thank you, Deputy AG Keller. And with that, I will make one brief comment and say that I personally have met with the AG's office on a number of occasions, and I want to point out that in this particular bill, there are some things for IT services, particularly to modernize equipment, as well as modernizing some of our programs for charities and things like that. We've had extensive conversations on those issues, and I believe, if I may take a liberty, AG or Deputy AG, in the added FTEs, there is included some information technology folks and some shared services folks. Can I assume that those are partially responsible for some of the modernization efforts that we've been using to increase the efficiency of the attorneys within the AG's office?
Madam Chair, absolutely. In the one-page document, we do go into more detail for all the members about the, you know, breaking out the particular needs of our office. We're proud of the detail we've provided, you know, up until this point, and feel it's important to give you that information. I will say, as somebody who's been at the AG's office for the first 6 years of AG Ellison's administration, the investments you made have made a tremendous difference and continue to make an important difference in our ability to bring the office into a high highly sophisticated age of litigation. We did not have those tools at the beginning, and I think it's reasonable to continue to share with the committee the need for increased tweaking of the investments you've already made as those become available.
Thank you for that. I do want to say thank you because I know Representative Elkins and I reached out to the office and were very promptly and warmly greeted and have spent numerous occasions with conversations about modernization of the office. And with that, we will move to Representative Sexton.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Basically, as a veteran of the federal government, we reallocate resources when we have challenges. Nowhere in any of these presentations have I seen where, especially in these one-pagers, somebody has said, hey, we've reallocated some of these resources. I believe the state has added 6,000 people over the last couple of years to our roles as far as employees. Where are we ever reallocating resources? We just keep asking for more and more and more. I would like to see future presentations show us how we're better utilizing our assets, our human assets especially, to reallocate those resources for the needs of today and the future. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Sexton, in the governor's budget proposal that we just heard previously, House File 2783, the governor is asking for consent to reallocate resources and to move them from one agency to another. I'll just bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do want to make sure we keep in mind that we do need to keep things moving today. We have three individuals left on the list. I have Representative Howard, followed by Representative Kraft, and finally we'll go back to Chair Nash. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Bonner, and thank you, Representative Cleavorn, to the AG's office. We heard a sort of a version of something we've heard a lot this year, which is like, we can't focus on the federal government. We need to just focus on the state of Minnesota. But when the people of Minnesota would experience significant harm based on federal action, of course that's in our purview. And I'm wondering to the Deputy Attorney General, if you could highlight some of the ways that the Attorney General's office has brought actions in defense of the people of Minnesota in the first few months of the Trump administration.
Thank you. Deputy AG Keller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Howard. We have said, I think, in numerous occasions that bringing lawsuits against the federal government is not what we wake up planning to do. There have been a flurry of actions by the executive branch in the first 2 months. Our office, along with the majority of other Democratic AG offices, have directly taken action on 9 different occasions. I think the one way that we talk about them that makes sense is we are, as the chief legal officer and office for the state, we are also bound to defend the Constitution and rule of law. The first lawsuit that we agreed to participate in, again, with AG offices from across the country, was on the effort to redefine the U.S. Constitution around birthright citizenship, where there is a clear deviation from longstanding interpretation of law in the Constitution. We will step in under our oath under the Constitution to make sure the law is followed. That reading, clear and straightforward reading of the Constitution, dates back to the 14th Amendment, when we as a country decided that the descendants of slaves would be citizens upon birth on soil, as well as anyone else except for the children of diplomats born in the United States. So it's, I think, a clear example of the consequence of not acting when we see a clear misinterpretation or violation of things as fundamental as the Constitution. We are required to act. A second example that I would provide that, again, directly impacts each of you and all of us in Minnesota would be around the funding freezes that that abrogate the direct responsibility of the legislative branch. And so most of the challenges that have taken up our litigation capacity and those of other AG's offices have looked at, is the Constitution being violated? Was the will of Congress being violated? And those are a couple examples.
Thank you. Representative Howard.
And I would just name that many of those have been successful. And name a few more. The Attorney General's efforts to stop the unconstitutional dismantling of our Department of Education, which could have severe impacts for the state of Minnesota. Efforts to stop the dismantling of vital public health research at the University of Minnesota. And so these are ways that the Attorney General's office is advocating for the people of Minnesota. The last quick comment, I know we're trying to move quickly, is that also when one area of this, the branches of government sort of lets us down, we need to have a response. You know, at the federal government, we've seen the dismantling of the Consumer Federal Protection Bureau. We've seen the firing of inspector generals. We've seen the layoff of folks at the IRS to go after tax cheats. And so now more than ever, we need a strong attorney generals who will fight for consumer protections and the people of Minnesota. And I appreciate the attorney general's efforts to do just that.
Thank you for that. We do have Director Sales that might have something additional to add to this conversation.
Thank you. This was just in response that the Attorney General will be here on April 1st to give an overview of the office, which was, I think, we tried to schedule for earlier this week, but didn't work out, so he'll be here next week.
Thank you. I do want to mention we have additional people on the schedule, so we will need to move, but I do want to also mention for the AG's work that when we talk about things like public health that are really critical and Medicaid funding that we're looking that may be cut, we want to remind us that that covers our parents and our children. But for hospitals in rural America and in Minnesota, they are often some of the largest employers in our rural areas that could decimate and gut funding for our rural areas, as well as MDE. Often some of the largest employers are also our school systems. Impacts to that kind of funding could seriously impact the health and welfare of Minnesotans in greater Minnesota. And so I want to make sure we call that out. With that, I'm going to move over to Representative Quam, and please be brief because we do need to get to Chair Nash and close out.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed not a lot of brevity on the previous national topics. One thing I have noticed about the AG's office is that when there's presentation before the Legislative Audit Commission about fraud and misuse, there has been a pattern of slow response, if not ignoring many of the things, and that's where I thought the AG would actually be, you know, right there. But maybe it doesn't have a good press conference that they can get national media on, but it's important to our citizens because hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars meant to help the citizens isn't helping them. And, for brevity, I won't go through the easy list of recent times that the AG has been slow to the ball or not on the field.
Thank you for that, Chair Quam. Deputy Commissioner AG, or Deputy AG Keller, did you have any response that you wanted to add to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Quam. I'm not sure specifically what you're referencing. We will be discussing, I believe shortly, our efforts to increase our capacity on Medicaid fraud. We have a dedicated team who works on Medicaid fraud, which again is a direct responsibility Congress has given our office and all state AG offices. So happy to talk about the work of that unit and how we can increase that. In the rest of fraud, our charities, the investments you made in our charities division, in 2023 has allowed us to increase our ability to respond to fraud that gets reported about charities. And so I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair and Representative Quam.
Thank you, Deputy AG. And finally, we're going to close out with Chair Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just maybe go back a little bit. On November 25th of 24, it was announced who the chairs would be by Speaker Damuth, and I was named chair of, or co-chair now, of State Government Finance. Since that time, the AG has not reached out to me once to meet with me, tell me the priorities that he would be bringing in his bill. Nor did I hear from the deputy, nor did I actually hear back from the AG when I sent letters once we began session. We sent out letters actually before we began session. It took the AG 2 months to respond and one follow-up prodding to get answers back to the letters that we sent. And I will commend other constitutional officers and will commend other commissioners. They have found time to make it onto my calendar and have actually gone out of the way to find time on my calendar. And I'll just point out that as chair or co-chair of State Government Finance, it would have been quite wise to find time on my calendar, and yet that was not done. I think Representative Bonner said that she and Representative Elkins were warmly and promptly greeted, and I found no such accommodation for myself. And when I had to reach out to the AG a second time to prompt response to the letters that we sent for myself, I felt like I was being largely ignored. So to Chair Cleburne, what is your motion for this bill? Where is it going to?
Chair Cleburne.
Thank you, Chair Bonner and Co-Chair Nash. The motion that I will be bringing at close of this bill is to re-refer this bill to Ways and Means. As everyone on this committee knows, we've not yet received our budget targets. So it is my intention to move this bill to Ways and Means as a vehicle bill, as a backup vehicle bill, if we need one. Everyone on this committee should know that no bill can leave Ways and Means without the joint consent of the joint co-chairs, Lead Torkelson and Lead Stevenson. So this bill is moving to Ways and Means as a potential vehicle bill, but it is an important piece of legislation that I would like our committee to consider in our final budget bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Chair Nash.
And thank you. We will ask for a roll call on this.
Thank you. A roll call being requested. I will ask staff to take the roll.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I realize you just called for the
roll.
That's
okay. Madam Chair.
If I can ask for just a pause, if that's all right with Co-Chair Nash, since he's asked for the...
Apologies. I should have allowed you a chance to speak. Chair Cleburne.
Thank you. I wanted to give Director Sales an opportunity to respond to the statements made by Lead Nash. We clearly heard from Lead Nash that he did not feel heard, so I would like the office to have an opportunity to respond.
Thank you. Director Sales.
Hi. We are in the process of setting up a meeting with your office. I think that we've reached out. So I just wanted to say that we hear you and apologize for that, and we'll be meeting with you soon, hopefully.
Thank you, Director Sales. And with that, a roll call has been Chair Nash.
I do appreciate, thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate that we're getting to me now. I did receive your email that said, from I believe somebody at the AG's office that said that you're woefully behind on reaching out. Those were your words, I think. And yet I had been named as chair on November 25th. So, allocation of time and utilization of time is important, particularly when you know that the person who you should be meeting with is the chair of the committee that has jurisdiction over your budget. So thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Mr. O'Neill, will you take the roll? And just to be clear, the motion in this is to move House File 2846 to Ways and Means.
Co-Chair Cleburne.
Aye.
Co-Chair Cleburne, aye. Co-Chair Nash.
No.
Co-Chair Nash, nay. Vice Co-Chair Bonner.
Aye.
Vice Co-Chair Bonner, aye. Vice Co-Chair Davis.
No.
Vice Co-Chair Davis, no. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Representative Anderson, no. Representative Clardy.
Aye.
Representative Clardy? Aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg? Aye. Representative Jones?
Aye.
Representative Jones? Aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy? Nay. Representative Howard?
Aye.
Representative Howard? Aye. Representative Kosnick? Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kraft?
Aye.
Representative Kraft? Aye. Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Quam? No. Representative Sexton?
Representative Sexton? No.
Representative Sexton? No. Madam Chair, the ayes are 7 and the nays are 7.
With a tie, that means that the motion does not succeed, and therefore we will then move to lay over House File 2846 for potential inclusion. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Norris, for being with us. I will move that House File 23, just a moment, I want to make sure I have the right motion in front of me. That House File 2354 be re-referred to Judiciary. And with that, Representative Norris, if you will speak to your bill, please.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. I do have a technical A3 amendment. I don't know if we want to take care of that first.
Please, if you'll speak to the A3.
I'll move
that the A3 be before us.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. The A3 amendment is a technical change recommended by House Research. We amended the bill in the last stop in public safety. Our expert House Research staff identified that there is now a duplicative piece of language elsewhere in state statute, and so the A3 amendment just strikes that duplicative language elsewhere in state statute.
Thank you, Representative Norris. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Lead Nash or Chair Nash? Okay. Seeing none, I will move that the A1 be adopted. A3 be adopted. Correction, we are discussing the A3. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the A3 is adopted to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and members. It's great to be with you this morning. Minnesotans are a generous people. When our neighbors and our communities are struggling, we believe in offering them a helping hand. That's why it's disappointing, frustrating, and quite frankly, completely unacceptable when that generosity is taken advantage of. Medical assistance fraud steals from hardworking taxpayers across Minnesota. And it also steals money meant to deliver health care to some of the lowest income people in our state. That's disgraceful, and we're here today to crack down on this type of fraud. Attorney General Ellison's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit already does great work catching people who steal from medical assistance and making sure that they're held accountable. In fact, an audit found that they've won the most convictions for provider fraud when compared with similarly sized states across the country. And this unit, with a budget of roughly $5 million per year, has won over $53 million in civil penalties and criminal restitution over the last 5 years alone. As Minnesota's medical assistance budget grows, Attorney General Ellison's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit should as well. After all, it takes people to fight fraud. That's why this MAP Act provides funding for 9 new staffers for the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. The MAP Act also improves Attorney General Ellison's ability to investigate Medicaid fraud by expanding the office's subpoena powers. At present, even when the Attorney General's office is conducting a criminal investigation, it lacks the authority to acquire certain financial records. This is an authority that county attorneys already have. So this bill simply puts the Attorney General's office on par with a county attorney's office that would be conducting a similar investigation. The MAP Act also brings penalties for medical assistance fraud in line with other theft penalties, including a maximum penalty of up to 20 years in prison and a fine of up to $100,000 if you steal $35,000 or more. We've seen a lot of attention on fraud related to grant programs in the Minnesota House, and while scrutinizing grants is important, for the Department of Human Services, which is our largest state entity, only 3% of all funds that go out the door are in the form of grants. Medicaid, in contrast, accounts for 89%. So with that, Chair Cleavorn and members, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier from the Attorney General's office to explain more about why this legislation is needed.
Thank you. When you're ready, you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Chair Cleavorn, Chair Nash, members of the committee, I'm Nick Wonka, the director of the Minnesota's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, which is housed in the Attorney General's office. And I'm here today to testify in support of House File 2354, otherwise known as the MAP Act, which will help ensure that we in Minnesota continue to be able to investigate and prosecute fraudsters who steal taxpayer dollars that should be dedicated to providing critical health care services to Minnesota's most vulnerable people. Minnesota's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit has existed for over 40 years. We're one of 53 in the country. Every state has one, as do D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Each one of us is funded by a federal grant from the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General. That grant covers 75% of our funding and comes with conditions on what we can and cannot do. It requires us to spend 100% of our time investigating and prosecuting Medicaid provider fraud and the abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation of vulnerable adults who reside in certain settings. And as you can see from the handout, our investigators and prosecutors are good at what they do. Over the past 5 years, the state of Minnesota has only spent about $5 million on our Medicaid Fraud Control Unit. In that same time, the unit has won $53 million in restitution and recoveries. With those federal requirements come certain prohibitions, too. We're the investigators and prosecutors, but we aren't the administrators of the program. For example, federal regulations require us to be entirely separate from the agency that administers the Medicaid program, which in Minnesota is DHS. So we can prosecute it, but we can't turn off payments on the front end or bar a certain provider from enrolling with Medicaid or continuing to receive payments. We also can't investigate or prosecute fraud in obtaining benefits, also known as welfare fraud, or fraud in other public programs. But those limitations have allowed us to specialize and be skilled at what we do. Our numbers back that up. We get audited from time to time by the Federal Office of Inspector General, and the last time they looked at us in 2022, they noted we had more fraud convictions than other similarly sized Medicaid fraud control units. And we've continued that trend the past few years as we've outpaced even larger and more well-funded units in provider fraud charges and convictions. What we're asking you for today is the tools and resources to continue keeping up that good work. Minnesota's Medicaid budget has grown quite a bit in the past few years, but our med fraud unit has not. We're at 32 people right now. It's a dedicated group of skilled investigators, analysts, prosecutors, and legal support staff. And what we're asking for is simply to match the recommendation for our unit staffing given to us by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General. They calculate our staffing needs based on the size of our state Medicaid budget. More Medicaid dollars being paid for services, more staff needed to investigate fraud. That's why New York, California, Florida, Texas have hundreds of people, while South Dakota only has a handful. Our recommended number right now is 41, and that's what we're asking for. It'd be 9 additional people, 1 lawyer, 7 investigators, and 1 support staff. But the state would only be paying for 2 1/4 because the federal government will pay for the rest under our grant. And with those people and the additional tools we'll get through the MAP Act, we'll be better able to continue our mission to hold fraudsters and abusers accountable for their crimes. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your important testimony. Next, And then we have Thomas Elmas, who's here from ARP. No, not seeing him this morning. Okay. We will go on then to discussion of the bill, if that's all right. Members? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I like the intent that this bill is working towards. Part of the problem is finding things out quicker and preventing, more and more accumulating. And here there's an attempt to improve the language so things are reported quickly. This committee prevented the motion forward of a bill to improve the language and improve the notification and, we're moving this one forward. I'm just disappointing that we didn't move the one that allowed the same language for the state audit, legislative auditor as a state auditor for reporting, and we're still encumbering the process to get it reported more quickly and preventing greater fraud. So as we consider this bill, I want members to think about trying to get that other bill moving so we can more fully address the problem that we're all agreeing we have.
Thank you, Representative Quam, and I would agree 100% that cooperation in this committee would be beneficial to all of us. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Koznick?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I had to step out, so I didn't catch the first testifier's name, but I was just, if you wouldn't mind, give me some leeway. I know this is dealing more directly with fraud and legal issues. Are you able to speak about work requirements in Medicare?
Mr. Wonka.
No, we investigate and prosecute Medicaid provider fraud. The administration of the program is outside our realm, and I would, so no.
That's fine, Madam Chair. Thank you. Just something that we can have in another discussion, probably not relevant to this particular bill, but I appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Koznick, and I can see nothing more important than the Attorney General's office in dealing with the legal issues of the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much. And seeing no further questions, Lead Nash, or Chair Nash, passing, okay. With that, I will renew my motion that House File, did you have any closing comments, Representative? Okay. I will renew my motion that House File 2354, as amended, be re-referred to Judiciary. There's no problem. Okay. And all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the bill is on its way to Judiciary. Thank you. Okay, I feel like jumping bean this morning. House File 1836 is now before us.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, Chair Cleavon. And with that, we will bring before us House File 1836 for consideration. Chair Cleavon, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you very much. And we will, the motion is to lay House File 1836 over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Cleavon. And I do not see that we have any amendments for that, so we'll go straight to the bill. Chair Cleavon.
Thank you very much. And House File 1836 is the Department of Administration's bill to improve the data challenge appeal process and to protect private data. Just as way of background, an individual has the right to challenge data about themselves held by a Minnesota governmental entity if they believe it to be inaccurate or incomplete. Those challenges can be appealed to the Commissioner of Administration. The bill proposes to update the data challenge appeal process in the following ways. First, it allows not public data to be shared between agencies to facilitate appeals. Currently, data challenge appeal information is assumed to be public, but government entities may need to submit private data to facilitate appeals. The second piece of this bill keeps inaccurate or incomplete data private at the Department of Administration. This ensures that private data stays private during the data challenge appeals process and prevents further dissemination of incorrect or incomplete data when the commissioner orders data to be corrected, completed, or destroyed. Challenge data that are determined to be accurate or complete will remain public. With me today, I have Casey Carmody, thank you, who is the Assistant Director of Data Practices for the Department of Administration. Do you want to testify or just answer questions?
I'm happy to just make one comment here.
Okay.
Okay.
If you would please recognize Mr. Carmody.
All right. Thank you. Assistant Director Carmody, if you'd like to go ahead and state your name, affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Casey Carmody, Assistant Director of the Data Practices Office. I just want to thank Chair Clevorn for bringing this bill forward for us and provided a great overview. The only thing that I would add is that this bill really just builds on some of the changes from last session to bring a little more clarity and efficiency to the data challenge appeal process in Chapter 13. And I'm happy to stand for questions.
All right.
And Chair, I would also like to know the committee members to know that this bill has been through judiciary already.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. Do we have any questions to discussion? Questions from either side? None? All right. Then why don't we go ahead and allow Chair Clevorn to close on the bill?
Thank you. Because this does deal with data practices, I think it would be good to ask if there's anyone from the public who...
Appreciate that. My apologies. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to testify? My apologies. I seem to have skipped that. All right. Seeing none, Chair Clevorn, if you'd like to close.
Thank you. It's a good bill, and I would ask that just House File 1836 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Clevorn. And with that, we will lay over. House File 1836 is laid over for possible inclusion. And next before us, we have House File 2713 up for consideration. Chair Clevorn, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you. And House File 2713 is the State Personnel Management Provisions Update. And I would move that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. And Chair Clevorn, it looks like we have an A1 for this bill. Is that correct?
That is correct. The A1, I would move adoption to the A1. You will see on line point 12 of the amendment that on page 19, line 28, we are striking outdated language of supported work, and we are inserting the corrected title of customized employment. And then you will see in the amendment on line 1.4, that on page 20, line 25 of the bill, we are deleting a repealer that was accidentally inserted. It was an incorrect repealer, so that's being deleted.
Okay. Thank you for that. Chair Clevorn, are there any questions to the A1 amendment? Anyone? All right. Seeing none, we will move to adoption. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right, the ayes have it. The A1 is adopted. And with that, we will move on to the bill itself. Chair Clevorn, did you have any additional comments or should we go to testifiers?
So the bill contains 32 different sections, and it contains a lot of language. What I would like to do is to allow the Deputy Commissioner, Blake Chafee, to just give a few opening remarks, and then I can walk through each of the sections if that's necessary. But in each of your packets, you will find a handout that stated Bill Overview 43A, State Personnel Management Improvements, which should explain to each of you the changes that are being made in each section.
Thank you.
Mr. Chafee.
Yeah, members, please take a look at the insert in your package. And with that, we will turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Chafee.
Chair, members, for the record, Blake Chafee, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget. Briefly, proposal combines a range of clarifications and what we would say are modest improvements across Chapter 43A State Personnel Management statutes. Changes in the bill fall into two broad categories. First, technical changes, including updates to conformity. Those changes include removing criteria of age and health from considering salary on demotion. Other changes, technical in nature, such as renaming the commissioner's plan. Folks are often surprised to know there are no commissioners in the commissioner's plan. The cleanup also includes some updates to the state employee group insurance program statutes to remove a handful of obsolete references. Second, and the most, I would say, significant change proposed in the bill is an overhaul of the current supported work program. following direction from the 2023 legislature, not to seek improvements to better promote employment of people with significant disabilities within state government. In 2024, there were two employees in the service worker classification, most recent hire occurring in 2011. Two employees were also in the supported employment worker class. So last year, MMB convened an advisory committee, representatives from our agency, along with state's Vocational Rehabilitation Services Program, State Services for the Blind, both programs at DEED, as well as the Minnesota Council on Disabilities. Product of the committee's work is the proposal in this bill to convert the existing and ultimately the infrequently used supported work program into a new pathway for employing people with disabilities into customized employment. Customized employment is really a person-centered approach to identify work opportunities for individuals with significant disabilities. Trained providers, like those currently at DEED, work with interested candidates to develop a skill profile under the philosophy that everyone who wants to work should be able to do so. And everyone that has a skill or an ability to contribute to their community should be able to do so. Those potential employees meet with support staff from DEED, other qualified providers, and then meet with employers to match that potential employee's skill with existing tasks, with existing projects at the employer. The committee agreed that while there was no current mechanism to offer customized employment at the state or with the state as the employer, that a change in law would permit this type of approach. So proposed change would allow for the implementation of this new customized employment program, and then I would say eventually most likely render the related job classifications in 43A and the supported work program obsolete. Concludes my overview of the bill. I'm happy to take any questions that members might have.
Thank you. Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are happy to entertain questions.
All right. Thank you for that. Then we will move to discussion. Are there any members with questions or comments? No? Okay. I will ask, and apologies, I did it again. I will also mention here, I did not ask, are there any members of the public that wish to testify on this bill? All right. Very good. And I don't see any discussion to the bill. Chair Cleavorn, if you would like to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a good deal of information in the members' packet about what the bill actually does, and I would encourage everyone to have a look before we would include any of these provisions in our final bill. And I would ask that House File 2713, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. With that, House File 2713 is laid over as amended for possible inclusion.
Next, we have before us House File 10, or the 10th item on our agenda, House File 1198. Representative Niska, if you'd like to come forward. Oh. This is an exciting day in state government. We have the co-chairs of the Committee of Rules and Administrative, what is that called? What is it?
Rules and Legislative Administration.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the committee. I think this is the first time we've had you before the committee. So if you would please, I will move that House File 1198 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, if you'd just like to explain the bill, we'd be happy to have discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We say often that bills are simple bills. This is quite a simple bill. It changes a word, one word to another word, 5 to 6 in the provision on leadership pay. We have currently an odd number of leadership pay positions in statute, but we have an even number of members in the Minnesota House, as we have become very aware, and that can result in a tie. And so this is a provision that was agreed upon to acknowledge the possibility of a tie. And I'm honored to co-author it with DFL Floor Leader Long, who's with me today.
Thank you. And Co-Chair Long, would you like to say anything about the bill?
Sure. I'll just note that in the last biennium, we changed this provision from 3 to 5. And I think at the time, we should have just done 3 to 6. So we included the full three-person primary leadership of the majority party, but we didn't do so for the minority. We should have done that at the time. It was, I think, an oversight. And now we're in a tie, so I think it's a good time to fix this and recognize the primary leadership responsibilities in each caucus.
Thank you very much, and I would agree. It's a great deal of work, and I advocated for that balance last budget year. Co-Chair Nash, would you like to say anything?
I think it's my best interest to say nothing on this one, since you. I'm the third leader.
Okay. Members, is there any discussion to the bill?
Well, in that case.
Seeing no further discussion on the bill, is there anyone in the public who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, I would renew my motion that House File 1198 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you both for getting up and coming here. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
And with that, the bill is laid over. Okay. I believe that that is everything that we have on our agenda. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, April 1st. And with that, yes. Thank you very much. We are, the State Government Finance and Policy Committee will be doing separate finance bills and policy bills this year. So I would encourage everyone, the DE on the policy bill will be out next week. So if you are interested in the policy of this bill, of this committee, please look to the website for that material. Thank you very much. And with that, we are adjourned.